This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
How many of you kept waking up last night because of the rain? All night long, I just kept waking up. I was like, oh man, the basement is flooding. I know it. Not going down there. There's no way. Like, not till after church. I'll go survey the damage. Our vision as a church is to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom. We want everyone to experience the abundant life that Jesus has for us. And we know even intuitively, like that doesn't just come to us automatically or by default. That comes to us as a result of following Jesus, of living as his disciples. You know, we've even tried to summarize to some extent what is this abundant life that Jesus has for us? What does it look like? Well, we say it looks like a devoted life, a life of devotion, a shared life in community, a spirit-filled life, and a generous life. And these are just the kinds of things that we see descriptions about the early church in Acts. These are the kinds of things that we see in their life together. And so that is kind of what we're looking to see in our life together. And that really brings us to the series we're starting today. It's a three-week series we're calling Generous. And for 3 weeks, we're going to really take a deep dive into Romans chapter 12, because I think it's going to help us understand some of the vital aspects of our life together as a church. And I want to begin this morning with just the first two verses. Just the first two verses. They're some of the most often quoted verses in the New Testament. And let me just read them again. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. There's so much in those two verses. One of my favorite preachers is a famous guy from London, Martin Lloyd-Jones. He preached 12 consecutive sermons at one point in his ministry on these two verses. So we're not going to do that, but 1 week on these two verses. They really are an amazing summary of the Christian life. And definitely, one of the things that Paul is teaching us here is how to live generously. How to live generously. Generosity is, without question, one of the hallmarks of this abundant life of Jesus. And Paul here is teaching us what it means. What is the essence of living generously? What does it look like? Verse 1. Offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. That is what it means to live a generous life. It is the giving or the offering of ourselves, our entire lives, to God. The generous life is a life that is lived as a sacrifice to God. And what does that mean? To live as a sacrifice to God. What does it mean to live generously, to offer ourselves completely over to God? You know, all of Paul's audience, so his audience in Rome, the church in Rome, was made up of both Jewish believers and Gentile believers. But all of them knew about sacrifices. I mean, that was just a common practice in the ancient world. They all knew about sacrifices, and what they knew happened to sacrifices is that they were killed. That was the point of a sacrifice. In fact, the root word for, so we use sacrifice as a noun, but the root of that word is a verb, which means to kill. That's what it literally means. So Paul here, though, is describing us as living sacrifices. So when we offer our entire selves over to God, we're living sacrifices. We're not literally being killed, because you can't be a living sacrifice if that's the case, but something is being put to death there. Something is dying, or else Paul wouldn't use that language. I mean, he's using that language very specifically. So it's not as if we're literally dying, but something is dying there. And what is it? What is it? Well, it's something that is a bit challenging for us. I guess I'd put it this way. What's being put to death there is the idea that we have the right to live as we choose. Let me say that again. So when we place ourselves figuratively up on the altar and say, Lord, I'm offering myself to you as a living sacrifice. What is being put to death is the idea that we have the right to live as we choose. And I said that twice because I'm not sure that there has ever been a culture in the history of the world, and I mean that literally, I'm not sure there's ever been a culture that is more averse to that teaching than ours. That very idea that we would give up the right to live as we choose makes no sense to us. That is the air we breathe. That is what we all want. That is what we strive for every day of our lives. But Jesus affirms what Paul writes. Jesus says it a little bit differently, but he says the same thing. He says if we want to follow him, we have to what? Deny ourselves and take up your cross daily. Well, what happens on crosses? Death. Things die on crosses. You put to death the right to live as you choose. You put to death the idea that you belong to yourself. You put to death the idea that you know best how to live your life. I mean, just think about that for a second. You put to death the idea that you know best how to live your life. That's insane in our culture. That makes no sense. But that's what Paul is telling us. And Jesus, ironically, tells us that it is that very death that actually leads to the abundant life that he wants to give us. He says, whoever loses his life will save it. So there we have it. Living generously is most fundamentally about giving ourselves to God, offering ourselves to God. You know, if I say the word generous, almost all of us go to money. And what I hope you're seeing is that it's not that easy. For most of us, giving some money is actually pretty easy compared to what Paul is talking about here. This is actually much more challenging. You know, the giving of ourselves completely to God, living as a sacrifice to God. It's placing ourselves up on the altar and saying, I die to the right to live as I choose. And by contrast, I'm going to trust you, Lord. I'm going to trust your instincts for how to live over my own. I no longer belong to myself. I belong to you. And you may be thinking, I wish he was just talking about money. That's the essence of living generously, to give ourselves completely over to God. Now, Paul says some other things in these two verses, and I want to go through them, and I think they really fall into kind of three different categories. One is there has to be a motivation for living generously, for being that kind of person. There's also a battle that we engage in trying to do that, to live generously. And then there's an outcome that comes from it all. So let's look at those three things. What is the motivation for generous living? Because that is really of the utmost importance. If we're going to give ourselves completely over to God, well, that has to flow out of the right motivation, or else it doesn't really work. Paul tells us what that motivation has to be. Verse 1, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy. In view of God's mercy, and that's it. That is it. The only true motivation for living generously, for living as a sacrifice to God, is his mercy. Therefore, in view of God's mercy. You know, the entire first 11 chapters of Romans, if you read it, the summary is, it's 11 chapters of Paul explaining God's mercy. How God's mercy has been shown to humankind. How God's mercy and love and compassion and forgiveness have been generously given to all humankind through Jesus Christ. That's kind of the summary of Romans 1 through 11. A verse that kind of condenses it all. Romans 5:8. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God, out of his mercy and love, has generously sacrificed for us. And therefore, Paul says, look, out of a response for God's love and mercy, we respond and out of love and gratitude to him. In view of his mercy, we generously give ourselves to him as sacrifices to him. We don't offer ourselves to God out of guilt or out of duty or out of some sense of pride or some sense of religious achievement. No, there can only be one motivation, and that is the mercy of God. And so when we say, Lord, here I am, I'm yours, I give myself to you as a living sacrifice, the only motivation for that, that is proper and that will sustain us, is God's mercy. John puts it this way, he says, that we love God because he first loved us. It wasn't our idea. We're simply responding. And I tell you, that is such an important thing to understand. The Christian life is not about what we do. It's about how we respond. God is the one who takes the initiative. We respond to him, not the other way around. So the motivation for living generously is the mercy of God. But we need to also talk about this battle that Paul describes. There's a battle that's going on that's trying to... There's a battle that takes place that's trying to pull us away from living generously. And Paul says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You know, since we're living sacrifices, that means the sacrifice is continual. Like it goes on, because if you're a dead sacrifice, well, that's it. You do it once. But as a living sacrifice, it's something that goes on and on and on every day, every hour. You know, we have to place ourselves up on the altar and stay there. And I've heard it said in a sermon before. I don't remember who said it, but that one of the difficult things about being a living sacrifice is that you are always trying to crawl down off the altar. And why is that? Why is that? Because the world is always trying to squeeze us into its mold. The world is always trying to get us to conform to its values and patterns and so forth. And so even as we place ourselves up on the altar and say, Lord, I'm all yours, we also hear that whisper in our ear that says, well, would you want to do that? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Why would you want to give up your freedom? You know, the world is always telling us, this is being reinforced in us every day, all day, that we should live for ourselves. That we should just do what we want. That we should define right and wrong for ourselves. The world is always trying to squeeze us into its mold so that we will get ourselves down off of that altar. So that we will not give ourselves completely over to God. And this is why Paul says, look, you've got to be transformed. You've got to be transformed. And that happens, according to Paul, by the renewing of our minds. I distinctly remember my freshman year of college. It was 1983. I was a freshman at the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, number one. We won big yesterday, but the coach was mad. He was furious after the game because they gave up 31 points. Never mind, they scored 65. But that's how you stay great, I guess, in football, is you have a coach who's always mad. Anyway, so my freshman year, why I remember it is not because of the football team, but because I was so lonely. I went to this school because of football, and I had just grown up indoctrinated. And so I went there, but I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any friends. And I made friends over the course of the year, but... Really, for the first few months, I was very lonely and just spent a lot of time in my room. But one of the good things that I did was I just, out of boredom, really, I just read the Bible. And I probably read the Bible like twice my freshman year of college. And the following summer, I worked at Colonial Presbyterian Church just down the street, part of their summer intern program. And the youth leaders that I had not been around during the school year, like when we started interacting, they're like, what in the world has happened to you? You've changed. Like you're a different person. And I was like, I don't know. I don't really know what you're talking about. They said, no. We can just see like something, you know, God has been doing things in your life. And that's really what happened, is that I was filling my mind with the things of God. And the Spirit was at work using that to renew and transform me. So that at the end of that school year, I really was a different person. In many ways, I was a different person. And that's what we need if we're going to resist that impulse to conform to the world's pressure. So that rather than crawling down off the altar, we can stay there. We can stay there as living sacrifices. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So that's a little bit about motivation and this battle that we have to wage for generous living. And I want to end with the outcome. What is the outcome? You know, in view of God's mercy, when we offer ourselves as living sacrifices to God, when we put to death the idea that we have the right to live as we choose, and we do that day after day after day, because we're not conforming to the pattern of the world, but we're being transformed by the renewing of our minds. When all that is happening, something amazing takes place. We are able to discern God's will, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. I mean, how many times have you found yourself in situations where you go, I wish I knew what to do? A lot, yeah, a lot. I wish I knew what to do. Well, as we are transformed by the renewing of our minds, more and more, we will know what God wants us to do. We'll be able to take the knowledge that we have about God and apply it to all the various life circumstances that we face. And what do we call that? Wisdom. We'll become wise. And goodness knows, that is something in short supply in our culture. I mean, can we just be honest here for a minute? How many people do we see on the TV that come across to us as wise? Anybody? But it all begins in view of God's mercy. It begins with our willingness to place ourselves up on the altar and to put to death the idea that we have the right to live as we choose. And if we're honest, that simply doesn't sound very appealing. It doesn't. We want to be free. We want to choose. We want self-determination. It's the air we breathe. It just sounds unthinkable to give that up. But here's what I want to suggest to all. Here's what I want to remind us of. And you may not believe this, but I think this is true. You're not nearly as free as you think you are. I think this whole idea of freedom that we have in our culture is somewhat of an illusion. I don't think any of us are nearly as free as we think we are. We're all living for something. We're all sacrificing for something, right? Maybe it's our career. Maybe it's our family. Maybe it's our social status. You know what? I think the God of Johnson County is comfort. And I think a lot of us are sacrificing for comfort. We're sacrificing to have a CVS and a Quick Trip on every corner. And I love Quick Trip. I can't wait to go there after church and get my Diet Dr. Pepper. I mean, but we are already living and sacrificing for something. And most of us have never actually done the hard inner work to figure out what that is. Like, what is it that it drives me? What is that ultimate thing in my life that makes me get out of bed in the morning and go and do what I do? We sang a hymn in the beginning of the 8:30 service, and it says, "Cast each false idol from its throne." And why? Because the Lord is God, and He alone. And that's really what Paul is talking about here. He's saying, look, you're already living and sacrificing for something. Now, I'm just asking you to get rid of that and put God there. Put Him there, because He alone is really the Lord. Let Him be the one who drives you. Let Him be the one that you're living for.